This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. As communities across the United States continue to deal with a crisis of addiction to opioids and heroin, some have pointed to Appalachia and even parts of West Virginia as being ground zero for the problem. One of them is journalist and author Sam Quinones, whose book Dreamland details communities across the country that have been ravaged by addiction. Quinones spoke with Dave Mistich about what he sees as the root of the problem, how it's being handled, and how it might have played a role in last year's election.
So your book Dreamland, published in April of 2015, delves into the opioid epidemic that sort of swept the country over the past few years. And it's my understanding that the title of the book makes reference to a community pool in southeastern Ohio. You also did some reporting in Huntington, West Virginia. So I guess it's safe to say that you got a firsthand look at the impact of this issue with opioids across Appalachia. If you would, tell me a little bit about what you learned about that problem specifically to this region.
Well, that it was very intense, of course, that it also had been largely ignored by the rest of the country. I believe that region, very roughly drawn, say, from Columbus over to Cincinnati, most of West Virginia, most of eastern Kentucky, down into eastern Tennessee, really was the canary in our societal coal mine that was very much ignored by the rest of the country for years as that problem was festering. I believe also that area was the first place, Huntington in particular, was the first place we saw what you're now seeing all across the country, which was massive addiction to pain pills, which were heavily promoted as the new treatment for all manner of pain. And therefore, eventually, doctors began to very heavily prescribe these, and a huge new supply of pills was unleashed on that area. Along with that, you had the development of pill mills. Scandalous kind of clinics where doctors really paid no attention to diagnosing people. They just dispensed prescriptions for cash. And you had this business model run rampant through that area as well. That area is also the first place where you got the arrival of very cheap heroin in the eastern part of the United States. Cheap and potent, very important to this story. The first place you see people begin to transition from OxyContin addiction, very heavy doses of OxyContin, over to cheap black tar heroin, and then die, is in Huntington, West Virginia, in the fall and early winter fall of 2007. That story now, that transition from OxyContin addiction to black tar heroin, to heroin from Mexico, very potent heroin from Mexico, is playing out all across the country now in the last 5 years. But you really saw it first in Huntington.
It seems like there's a difference between the rise of crack cocaine in the 80s that affected urban areas and this problem with opioids and heroin that has sort of gripped, you know, more white rural communities here across the country. You know, some would say that that's an issue of race and class that plays some role between the difference in these two problems. But there also seems to be a big difference in the response to these issues.
Yes, I would say so, that these are two very different responses to drug scourges that we saw from, say, the mid-80s to the early 90s, from the crack problem and the opiates to heroin problem that we're seeing now in the 2000s and into our current decade. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One, of course, I believe to be certainly true that it's race, and it's a predominantly white community, white society we live in, and they did not know a lot of crack users or addicts or sellers. And so, therefore, they were divorced from that problem and viewed it in very black and white terms to say, okay, just throw people in jail and that's all we ought to do. That community is now seeing their own children addicted to a very different substance, but equally as disastrous. And they are changing how they view crime and punishment, frankly. And you see this especially intensely, I think, and very interestingly, in red areas of America, Republican areas of America, because that's there where they're very unprepared for this, and it kind of jives with the idea of who they actually are as a community. And now you're seeing people really retreat from the tough-on-crime approach, the throw lock away, the lock them all away approach, to an approach saying treatment is best. We need to provide more treatment. They understand now that a felony record for their children is about as life mangling as an addiction itself.
You know, just after the election, you made a blog post on your website about the relationship of communities that were stricken by the opioid crisis and support for Donald Trump. What can you tell me about that relationship between these two communities, the opioid ravaged areas and the Trump nation, so to speak?
I think the in states that were crucial to his victory, that connection is very, very strong. You know, he won Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Michigan. There was a few other states that he won that probably were essential, but were the pivotal states were the ones that I mentioned. And in those areas, what you found was something interesting. You found in a lot of those areas, unemployment rates were falling. They were at the lowest rates they'd been in, say, 6 or 8 or 10 years. You would think there would be some optimism generated by that. But hidden beneath those numbers is really a more somber reality. And the somber reality you run into if you go to those counties, which is where people say, if we have jobs open up, our employers tell us that 70% of our job applicants cannot pass a drug screen because they're hooked, they're in drug. Also, a lot of people are simply not in that unemployment count because they are strung out. So they're not being the numbers don't accurately reflect reality. Also, you don't get that sense of optimism from a low unemployment rate that you might expect because the fog of drug addiction is everywhere. Also, I would say that there's a very strong argument to be made that in the last 2 years, 3 years, let's say, people have become far, far more aware of this problem in their communities, even though they may not have it in their specific immediate families. They know that the pastor's kid, the football quarterback, the neighbor down the street, people have addiction in their family. They're feeling it in just a general malaise, a general inertia, a general feeling of we're going nowhere.
Well, Sam, I think that about does it. Sam Quiñones is the author of Dreamland, The True Tale of America's Opioid Epidemic. Sam, thanks so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for your interest.
That was an excerpt of journalist and author of Dreamland, Sam Quiñones, speaking with Dave Mistich about the opioid crisis and how it has affected West Virginia, Appalachia, and the nation as a whole. That interview was produced for 100 Days in Appalachia, a collaborative project from West Virginia Public Broadcasting, West Virginia University, and the Daily Yonder. For more, follow along on Facebook and Twitter, and be sure to visit 100daysinappalachia.com. A second-grade student in Morgantown is the statewide winner of the Doodle for Google competition. Ann Lee has the story.
When the students at North Elementary School in Morgantown were called to a surprise assembly Thursday morning, they had no idea that one of them, a second grader named Taranam Rajai, had won the statewide Doodle for Google contest. State Senator Shelley Moore Capito made the announcement.
So I'm really happy to join my friends from Google to announce the 2016 West Virginia winner of the Doodle for Google, who happens to go to North Elementary, and her name is Taranam Raji in second grade.
The annual competition challenges grade school students nationwide to design a doodle, or a fun take of the Google logo. This year's contest theme was What I See for the Future. Taranam's doodle depicts life on Mars.
People can go on Mars and do new discoveries to learn more about Mars and see if once Mars had water or breathable atmospheres, something.
Taranam's parents and little brother also attended the assembly. Her father, Mehdi Rajai, said Google called him more than a month ago to tell him Taranam had won and instructed him and his wife to keep it a secret from their daughter.
And it was hard to us to keep this secret, but we tried that. Till today.
Taranam's mother, Zara Abbasi, says she's not at all surprised that her daughter has talent. In fact, Abbasi says Taranam can create art even better than what she drew for Google.
I know she could do better than this. He used imagination very well, and I think it's she's talent.
As the statewide winner, Taranam won a tablet computer and a T-shirt featuring her design. Her doodle will now compete at the national level, and the winning doodle will be featured on Google.com for one day. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ann Lee in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:54. Some dense fog this morning, giving way to mostly sunny skies and warm temperatures today. Temperatures ranging from the low 70s in the higher elevations to near 80 in the southwest. Increasing cloudiness tonight with rain developing after midnight, temperatures falling into the 50s. Breezy and rainy tomorrow, temperatures continuing to fall into the 40s, becoming partly cloudy on Sunday with highs only in the upper 30s and 40s.
Support for this weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents are available at erieinsurance.com.
Roots Rock Standard Bearers, the Bottle Rockets, return to Mountain Stage this week. Here, they perform their song, Dog, which showcases lead singer Brian Henneman's irreverent humor, as well as his love for his canine friend. The Bottle Rockets, with this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
Well, I love my dog, he's my dog. If you don't love my dog, that's okay. I don't want you to, he's my dog. I love my dog, he's my dog. If my dog don't love you, that's okay. I don't want him to, he's my dog. Sometimes just this simple. Sometimes life is just this simple. Sometimes life is really just this simple. I love my dog. I love my dog. He's my dog. If my dog don't love you, that's okay. I don't want him to. He's my dog. I love my dog. He's my dog. If you don't love my dog, that's okay. I don't want you to. He's my dog. Sometimes just this simple. Sometimes life is just this simple. Sometimes life is really just this simple. I love my dog. I love this song, it's my song. If you don't love this song, that's okay. I don't want you to. This isn't about you, it's about my dog. I love my dog, he's my dog. If you don't love my dog, that's okay. I don't want you to, he's my dog.
The Bottle Rockets with their song, Dog.
Oh,
you can
so
hear
kindly.
This song again and more music on Mountain Stage coming up this weekend here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glennis Boer, Dave Mistich, Roxy Todd, Liz McCormick, Kara Lofton, and Ann Lee. Our news director is Jesse Wright. Our music is by Matt Jackford. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director this morning is Chuck Anzalevich. I'm Beth Voorhees.